future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lind.
Hello, iGaming Intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsors. The iGaming Next podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. I've been working with Ashley, Lewis, and the guys over at Pragmatic Solutions over the last year, and as the early supporter of this podcast, I cannot recommend them enough. The Pragmatic Solutions Player Account Management Platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo. Happy past Thanksgiving, Lloyd. It's nice to have you here on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much, Pierre. It's great to be here. Been looking forward to this. You and I have been chatting offline and on various topics for a while now. We seem to be interested in a number of the same things. So excited to do this episode.
Absolutely, Lloyd. It's been a pleasure to get to know you here over the last couple of weeks and month here, obviously in preparation for our event in New York here in March, of course. And it's been really interesting to hear your feedback and input during these meetings. And I thought that it would be absolutely great to have you on the podcast today to talk about kind of the VC trends in North American online gambling and future paradigm shifts. I know that we have, as you said, some similar interests here in the more forward-thinking spaces like the metaverse and NFTs and the convergence of these spaces with online gambling and a host of other topics. But first of all, Lloyd, for those who don't know you, can you introduce yourself and kind of a little bit your background in this space?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Lloyd Danzig. I'm the managing partner of Sharp Alpha Advisors. We are a venture firm that specializes in sports betting and online gaming. I have almost more of a traditional Wall Street background. I worked at BlackRock for my first job out of college. I was a fixed income trader for a few years. I ended up going back to school full time and studying computer science, and then pivoted a bit more into the fintech quant world. And actually only by happenstance was in the right place at the right time in May of 2018 when PASPA was overturned to have a real front row seat to the explosion of sports betting that we're now here to talk about. And that was when I really jumped into the space professionally. Personally, I've been a lifelong sports bettor, sports fan, fantasy sports player, wagerer on my own video game performance and things of that nature. So all stuff that is very close to my heart. And I end up looking at every investment opportunity really from the perspective of, do I want to use this product? And am I selfishly interested in this coming to market so that I can enjoy it?
That's a good perspective, I think, going into investments. I'd love to kick off today a bit, Lloyd, to discuss emerging trends in the industry. Like, what are some of the most interesting emerging trends as you see them in the online gambling sector, sports betting sector particularly?
Yeah, there are so many now, and I guess hence the large number of conferences and podcasts dedicated to it that didn't seem to be existent only a couple of years ago. There are operational trends and consumer trends and product trends and regulatory trends. I think operationally and industry-wide, two of the most important trends that I have been observing and continue to observe are, one, the use of M&A as the primary vehicle for vertical integration and differentiation, especially at scale. And two, an unprecedented, especially compared to other markets, degree of partnership between betting operators and suppliers, the leagues and teams that play the games that are being bet on, and the media companies that are broadcasting and streaming those games. But even at a perhaps higher level or at the investment trend level, which tends to subsume all the other types of trends, as is the nature of investing, I really think there are two ultra important macro trends that I have my eye on. One is, it looks like, even in the early days here, that gaming's share of wallet in the US will exceed the levels of any other market in the world. And that ends up putting you above the $30 to $60 billion in terms of GGR, total addressable market range, that people often prognosticate over. And largely, this is for a number of reasons, it's largely because of the entertainment-driven nature of sports betting in the U.S., as opposed to how it is perceived and how iGaming is sometimes perceived in other markets. And then the other important, important macro trend, especially that I look at as an investor with a 5, 10, 15-year time horizon, is that I think very clearly now, the total addressable market in this space far exceeds the aggregate of gross gaming revenues. It is now clearly going to include revenues from NFT marketplaces and delivering frozen pizzas and opening brick and mortar sports bars and maybe opening virtual reality metaverse based sports betting and entertainment experiences and who knows what else people probably haven't even imagined yet. But very clearly, when you look at what DraftKings is trying to do, when you look at new entrants like Fanatics, the total addressable market is far greater than just what traditionally has been thought of as gross gaming revenues.
Right. And I think what we're talking about here, you know, from the European side of things, the betting experience, the sports betting experience over the last 15 years in the online space has been the same. You know, you go to your Bet365s, for example, or your Ladbrokes.com or whatever, you log into to the site and you're met with this like advanced spreadsheet of different odds and opportunities you have for bet for for different opportunities of sports and so on. And what you are saying is essentially that as we go forward into the future, the betting experience will change or it will evolve. Where perhaps the sports bet itself is not the primary reason why you are logging into, you know, your ESPN Plus streaming service, for example, you're there to stream sports, whereas you are then given the opportunity to place a sports bet. Or like you're saying here, you know, you go into a sports bar to have a couple of beers with your friends and you are met with the opportunity to place a bet, so to say, or Fanatics here who are coming from a different angle with their, you know, merchandise opportunities and so on. Like, is that how you see things as well, that kind of the betting experience is changing and with it comes all of a sudden a larger addressable market because of that than what has been previously estimated?
I definitely would agree with that as an overarching long-term trend, that the betting experience is changing and in particular changing insofar it is starting to include many types of functionality and user experiences that historically might not have been thought of as native to the betting ecosystem. But I don't want to overlook what I think is probably an important intermediary step or stepping stone along the way to that process in the US market. Something you mentioned, which is absolutely true, is that betting user interfaces are very intimidating, complicated. In the defense of betting operators, there is a lot of information to fit on a small screen with not that many options. But especially in the U.S. market, for example, where there is a desire to target people who maybe don't know what a money line or a spread or a parlay or an accumulator, as you guys might call it, even know what those things are. There likely will be a good deal of UI, and already is in progress, a good deal of UI UX innovation that simplifies this intimidating monolithic sports betting experience into something that is much more akin to what people are used to when they go on Spotify and Snapchat and Instagram and Netflix and LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, which are generally ultra intuitive, ultra simplified, perfectly fine-tuned and engineered interfaces with machine learning algorithms that learn your particular user preferences and serve you exactly what you need at the right time. And I think that type of innovation is what is current now, is in the works, and people are working on. And it is a step in the direction of the larger trend of the consolidation or interoperability of the sports betting experience with these adjacent spaces, such as merchandise, NFTs, sports bars, social gaming, and things of that nature.
Right. And, you know, having been in this industry for a long time, as a view, Lloyd, as well, you know, it very much feels like we are going through a bit of a paradigm shift in the sense, or a development within the industry where the industry traditionally has very much flown under the radar, whereas now it's being picked up, especially on the sports betting side, by very publicly facing brands, by massive media houses that are not necessarily iGaming or sports betting facing first, like the likes of Disney and Twitter the other day also announced that they're looking into potentially integrating sports betting into their social media platform, because why not? You know, Twitter is a kind of a live in the moment social media platform, which live betting on the sports betting side is as well. So why wouldn't you integrate sports betting into Twitter if they do the research and find out that it's not going to be something that stigmatizes Twitter as a brand, you know? And do you feel as well this? Do you see this kind of underlying trend as well, that because of the industry is kind of going mainstream in a sense, that these opportunities are now presenting itself to develop the product more and more than what has previously been possible?
Yeah, so there definitely already, prior to the overturning of PASPA, has been a cultural, sociocultural difference in the relationship that I think Americans have with sports betting compared to many other markets. You mentioned how, you know, gambling and online sports betting and brick and mortar sports betting has been allowed in Europe for, you know, a number of years, 15 years or so now. You go to a William Hill betting parlor in even the nicest part of London, and it is a very transactional location. I liken it to an ATM vestibule that has some machines. You go in, you go out, you complete your transaction as efficiently as possible with a small amount of space and electricity as possible. You go to a Las Vegas sportsbook, and whether a team is favored by 8 or 9 is maybe the least important facet of that entire experience for the majority of visitors. And I think what that shows is that there is something deeply rooted in the American or North American psychology, especially in their viewpoint towards sports betting, which we are now seeing magnified by the fact that there are multi-billion dollar public companies and certainly a number of regulatory changes that have brought it into the mainstream. So because of whatever that basis is, in addition to the validation of regulation, the way in which regulation removes some of the less desirable aspects of the ecosystem, there's no question that sports betting is being viewed by a whole bunch of stakeholders, almost all stakeholders, as an entertainment product in the US. The average DraftKings customer, whether they realize it or not, are psychologically classifying their deposits as entertainment expenses the moment the deposits are made. They're not classifying them as capital investment from which to earn an ROI. And so because of that, other brands, Disney in particular, which is often thought of as the brand that goes to the utmost lengths to protect its child and family friendly association, has now said, okay, this is really just being classified by most people as an entertainment category. The jury's still out on iGaming and online casino, whether that is an entertainment product or not. But sports betting, I think, is pretty clearly in the entertainment category. And so because of that, you're seeing a whole host of these non-native brands look at sports betting revenues. And it makes sense, because if DraftKings and the sports betting players are looking at non-native revenues, well, the people and brands that are currently generating those revenues, in theory, should be looking at what DraftKings makes money off of. And I think you can kind of put these players into two buckets. One bucket is the brands that are actually planning on operating as a regulated sports book, taking bets from their customers, cross-selling those customers into and out of other areas, but being an actually regulated entity that has odds making and risk management and trading functionality and all of that. And so Fanatics, I think, is probably the clear example of a major brand that is, or at least is about to be, operating digital and retail sports books and going this route. Then you have the other bucket, which are brands that are primarily licensing their brand and monetizing their user bases, maybe building out some additional functionality here or there to harvest the extra engagement, but will not at all be taking bets or anything close to it. And I think Sports Illustrated maybe is a good example here. Through Authentic Brands Group, their deal with 888, there's no Sports Illustrated employees or executives involved in taking bets or anything like that. It's a brand licensing. Yeah. Disney, I think, pretty clearly is going the latter route. They've announced they're looking for $3 billion over an unspecified period to license out the ESPN brand so that someone can operate ESPN Bet or whatever it will end up being called. My guess is that Twitter would go in a similar direction. Certainly, I don't envision Twitter or any of these giant tech companies getting licensed and taking bets. There are so many reasons why they would avoid doing that. It is operationally very complex and very different from what they do. The licensing process itself, if any of your listeners are gaming executives who have been licensed in even one, let alone many jurisdictions, you know how deeply personal and probing the licensing process is, and tech billionaires and media billionaires don't necessarily want the financial colonoscopy, if you will, that comes with being licensed. And so I would envision Twitter maybe building out some new cool functionality that incorporates betting into live feeds and facilitates conversations around live betting. But my guess is that they would be an affiliate or you know, not necessarily be taking and processing bets. But nonetheless, the big barrier to get over, which it seems these brands are getting over, is the association with sports betting in the first place. And the fact that that barrier seems to have been hurdled is, I think, what you've identified as a very important trend in the U.S. market right now.
Right. It's really interesting to hear, Lloyd. And I mean, I know that Disney mentioned as well, the CEO, that they are looking into licensing the brand, so they would fall into the second bucket here, as you mentioned. Another opportunity for them is to integrate sports betting into ESPN Plus, for example, into the streaming service, and basically, flip the switch and offer sports betting to, 100 million customers in the long run. And again, not through this really complex kind of spreadsheet formulas that you log into Bet365, but rather a more intuitive experience where you are presented with a very simple an intuitive way to place a bet. But you are saying that you don't think they'll go down that route when it comes to especially the regulation aspect and so on. You think that they will go down the route of just licensing the brand?
Well, I wouldn't say that necessarily. I have beta tested and am looking at numbers of different demo videos of betting technology integrated into live streaming and live broadcast where you can bet with your Roku remote or with your phone on your TV or whatever it is. I can envision ESPN doing something like what you said, allowing people to maybe see the live betting odds in a panel that pops out from the left side of the screen when watching something on ESPN Plus. But I would imagine that they still would not be the ones actually processing those bets and setting the odds. Maybe it's ESPN Bet powered by Bet365. And by the way, maybe people never even hear about Bet365. And maybe the average ESPN customer doesn't know that ESPN isn't processing the bet. I'm on board with any of those things happening. Yeah. I just think it's unlikely that ESPN becomes, or Disney becomes, the regulated entity that is getting a sport radar feed and setting the odds and hiring traders and limiting bettors and moving the odds. I think that will likely be handled by a Kambi, by an Rush Street Interactive, or some more traditional sports betting partner.
Right. And I mean, we are talking Disney here entering the mix with a market cap of, I don't know how many billions, how many hundreds of billions, essentially. But you would imagine that if Disney goes and commits themselves to this project, that it wouldn't necessarily be that there'll be another customer to Kambi, but it could potentially be that Kambi becomes an acquisition target, you would think. Do you think there are any of these kind of major suppliers or B2Cs at the moment who could be acquisition targets for potential challenger brands that are looking to enter the space?
So first of all, the crazy thing about this market is almost everyone is both an acquisition target and a potential acquirer at the same time. There's just pace of market development and deals in the space. Also, especially after we saw Endeavor purchase OpenBet, which really validated this idea of non-native, non-endemic players scooping up back-end suppliers to offer some sort of yet-to-be-determined vertically integrated experience. Absolutely. I think that there could be a very interesting dynamic in the not so distant future where there already are a very limited number of enterprise grade B2B suppliers in the space. There are certainly more B2C brands than there are enterprise grade B2B suppliers. Endeavor already bought OpenBet. DraftKings already bought SB Tech. If you imagine that suddenly, you know, Kambi and IGT get acquired, that really starts this almost panicked rush of everyone else to say, who are we going to acquire? How are we going to carve out some sort of back-end infrastructure if we can't build it ourselves and there's a limited number of suppliers and we don't want to use a supplier that's owned by one of our competitors? I think whether that happens in like a true panic fashion or more slowly or not at all, I could see any of those futures, but unquestionably, there's a period of intense acquisition activity ahead. It has already begun, arguably. I think you're going to see a lot more sub $100 million acquisitions, media acquisitions, tech roll-ups, you know, PointsBet acquiring Bannock, I thought was a perfect example of the types of sub $100 million deals. Chris Groves' company, you just had him on, yep. American affiliate, right? They just got sold to Fans Unite. I think you should expect to see a number of other deals like that. And I would not at all be surprised if in the next year or two, PointsBet, Rush Street Interactive, maybe PlayUp, some of the smaller, currently licensed U.S. operators that bring to the table some combination of infrastructure or relationships with infrastructure providers and market access by way of licenses are all, I think, prime acquisition targets.
Right, fair enough. And I want to take a step back here. I mean, we're speculating now as well on the integration of sports betting into ESPN Plus, but what has been confirmed is on DAZN. I always thought it was pronounced DAZN, but it's actually DAZN.
DAZN.
DAZN has announced that they are integrating both social and sports betting elements within their streaming platform. And so they are now taking this step. It was expected because they hired Shea Segev about a year ago from Entain, of course, to kind of infuse this new product development into DAZN's streaming platform. Now, it begs the question, if this is now the next generation of sports betting products that are emerging when you have the convergence of live streaming and sports betting, which obviously is a better user experience than the traditional way of betting, where it's like you go to a Bet365, you place your bet, and then you watch the TV on the side. So let's say you're sitting with two products separately. Why not converge them and you have one experience instead? And the experience for the user becomes so much better. Now, that begs the question a bit. What's the future for Bet365? Yeah, the likes of Bet365 and other sports betting facing traditional operators. Do you think that their business model is threatened, or am I exaggerating this new opportunity?
Great question. Number of thoughts. First of all, one important thing that you point out is the trend of simultaneously sports betting companies saying, how can we add streaming and other components to our experience to make it better? And then you have these other players like Fubo and DAZN starting with the streaming experience and others and saying, how can we add betting to make the streaming experience better? It'll be very interesting to see which of those groups do a better job. Maybe the betting infrastructure is more important than the streaming. Maybe it ends up that all that matters is that you have the rights to the right content. And as long as you have that and a decent betting experience, it's good enough. I'm not sure. It'll be very interesting to see which players have a leg up there. Bet365, I think, first of all, they don't need to go into the U.S. market if they don't want to. You would think they should, but they're a private company. They don't have shareholders pressuring them. They're doing $2 billion in revenue a year or whatever it is on $40 billion in turnover, I think. They're doing quite well. I do think that the main thing they are missing, they have a leg up on many U.S. operators in almost every operational and infrastructure related category. But what they don't have is a brand. And brand is extremely important in the U.S. market. There's a Goldman Sachs survey that their equity research group does every, I forgot how frequently, and asks users what is the most important factor in deciding what sports book or sports betting app to sign up for. Convenience is always number one, but brand is now number two in the most recent survey that they did. And convenience and brand were actually about even. And so even though in Europe and in particular in the UK, people might have an association with Bet365 is equivalent to betting, is equivalent to excellence in trading capabilities and odds origination and taking sharp action and things of that nature. People in the US market don't really have that that type of an association. So I think if I were Bet365, I'd be looking at one of two options. One is you have a very large marketing budget and likely the ability to bring on the right people to do a major push, become the official sports betting partner of a couple of the big teams in the US, maybe get a stadium named after you, you know, do some of those brand awareness generation tactics, or partner with. I thought that, you know, I don't think they will be interested, but I think Bet365 would be the perfect partner to pay ESPN $3 billion for a license because they can afford it. They can service an unlimitedly large customer base. They have the pricing capabilities, and what they lack is exactly what ESPN brings to the table. A brand like Betsson, you know, something similar. Some of these really high quality, incredibly sophisticated technological companies that lack brand awareness, I think would be served well to find that quickest shortcut to brand awareness. So Bet365 has options, including waiting and deciding not to pursue the U.S. market at a significant level. But if they do, to me, it seems that there are partnerships and licensing deals that are likely shortcuts to the brand equity and awareness that they would like to have in the U.S. that would take much longer during a critical time period to generate organically or even on a paid basis with any level of marketing campaigns, just because you get drowned out by the other marketing campaigns and free bets and deposit bonuses.
Yeah, it's a great analysis, I think, Lloyd, in general. And you're highlighting something really interesting here, which is a key difference between the European and American market. You know, if we wind back the tape around 10 years in the European market, what we saw was brands that conveyed trust were generally the brands that won in the European market. The online gambling world comes from a bit of a shady past, let's say. In the early 2000s, there were some nefarious players, and the players prioritized trustable brand essentially in the late 2000s. However, if you go forward now 10 years, that is not longer the case in Europe and Northern Europe, and even to the extent where like. Having brand equity in Europe is not necessarily what you need to be able to succeed in the European market. But what you need to do in the European market is kind of speak to a specific target audience. Like if you want to create a brand for a demographic of 20 to 25 year olds, you create a brand which is cool and hip. And you launch that product, and it will online casino, for example, or sportsbook will generate players in a quite quick pace, because the market tends to reward new brands rather than legacy brands, which is the difference here in the US, which is the opposite, where brand equity is seems to me at least to become very, very important in order to penetrate the US market. It seems to me that the US is very much a market for the big giants that are solidified, that have a lot of brand equity, and people recognize their brand, and therefore they seek themselves to the brand that they know and they feel comfortable with and they can identify with. Is that a fair comparison, would you say?
I think that is fair, but what I would add is that there is a bit of noise in the system. There's some confounding variables right now, given the pace of development and the sort of gold rush we are amidst in the US. It is almost impossible to compete without significant marketing dollars. DraftKings and FanDuel are both spending $200 million every quarter, $800 million a year each. Caesars committed to spending $1 billion on customer acquisition over the next 2 years, so $500 million a year. And that doesn't even include, if you see, there's a lot of regulatory turmoil in the state of Florida right now over legalization. DraftKings, FanDuel, and I want to say maybe Las Vegas Sands or BetMGM, they've thrown $10 or $20 million each into a political action committee there to help advance the interest. So you need to have a lot of money. Now, it tends to be the case, I guess, in the U.S. market that brands that have a lot of money and cash on hand are often the ones that have a lot of brand awareness, and those things go hand in hand. But you brought up an interesting point, which is the tendency in the UK and other areas of these smaller, maybe tier two or regional brands to cater to a specific audience. And unquestionably, there are specific audiences that are interested in betting in the US, whether those have to do with, you know, there's a large Spanish speaking audience in the United States. There's a large audience that wants their sports betting products to look and feel more like crypto or stock trading products. There's a large audience of people who love Formula One racing and feel alienated by the current product landscape. Same thing with mixed martial arts and esports. And so the question becomes, once we get past this current gold rush phase where it's almost just about who can get the most market share and eyeballs and impressions and first-time depositors as fast as possible, I would expect that even as much consolidation as we will have, there will likely be multi-brand strategies employed, something we've seen in Europe and other markets, not so much here yet in the US, although I suppose DraftKings Golden Nugget could be kind of pursuing that in a way. Penn acquired the Score, and at least the Score's media app, I don't think is going anywhere. So what I would expect is that, yes, brand equity and awareness, especially for getting the lion's share of market share, will be a very important factor, particularly as these sports betting brands become entertainment brands. However, I wouldn't lose focus on who and how does some of these niche audiences that still have large TAMs, how do those get marketed to and what products serve those? And ultimately, my guess, just based on the economics of the industry, the trends toward consolidation, but the need to have authentic brand presence, is that you'll find some of the larger consolidated operators going forward with multi-brand strategies.
Right. Interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we organized our event here, Give Me Next, in Valletta. We hosted Todd Haushalter, the Chief Product Officer of Evolution, who is in the news a lot at the moment, but that's a different story, as a keynote speaker. And he asked the audience, who is the biggest gambling company in the world currently? And the audience says, it's Evolution, you know, because that's what Evolution has been proud of recently, although not anymore, and not, at least not in the time of this recording. But and he said, no, it's not the biggest gambling company in the world. The biggest gambling company in the world by market cap is Coinbase. Right? So my question to you, Lloyd, is do you see crypto trading and the likes of Robinhood is day trading as a competitor to our space, or do you see them as a complement to our space, or are they two different things?
It's a great question. Now that we all have mobile phones generally connected to the internet, you often, especially in the US, most people have unlimited data plans, so they don't even need to be worried about being on Wi-Fi. In this day and age, competition is completely nonlinear. Reed Hastings at Netflix made waves when, in one quarterly earnings report, he said Fortnite was their biggest competitor. And then in the next one, he said that sleep was Netflix's biggest competitor. and I think that is absolutely correct. Who are DraftKings' biggest competitors? Netflix and Spotify and Peloton and Fortnite and Coinbase and Robinhood, definitely. Because at the end of the day, consumers have two eyeballs and a finite amount of attention, and everyone is really competing for that attention. Now, all of that said, obviously, there are types of user experiences that certain types of users tend to enjoy more and others that enjoy less. There are certain types of user experiences where if someone enjoys experience A, you can bet with a high degree of likelihood that they are or are not going to enjoy experience B. And it seems, and especially made popular by everything with Wall Street Bets and the GameStop saga, which I thought was one of the most entertaining times to be watching CNBC of all time, by the way, that now, yes, the fact that there is zero commission trading on penny stocks, on altcoins that function like penny stocks, the fact that, you know, inexperienced investors can start getting allocation to options, which for many function largely like lottery tickets, honestly, especially if you don't necessarily know what you're doing. There clearly is this confluence of interests at the intersection of gambling, trading crypto, trading stocks, trading fractional ownership in collectibles, whether they are bored apes or actual physical pieces of memorabilia. Masterworks just raised $100 million round to sell fractionalized pieces of Picasso paintings and famous Lamborghinis and things like that. And what I think it ends up boiling down to is that there's a particular personality type. To me, I think it's everyone must be like this because I'm like this, but probably not. There's a particular personality type that enjoys risking time and or money on uncertain outcomes. And that is the thing that bands together sports betting and crypto trading and betting on stocks for these people, is that you get to have a viewpoint or a randomized viewpoint. You get to have you have some skin in the game. You have a vested interest in a particular outcome occurring that other people are also following. There ends up being a community around this following of an uncertain outcome that can have financial upside if it moves in a particular direction. And so for those reasons, I think you're seeing, although not the entire sports betting user base, but a good chunk of the sports betting and sports betting likely user base also living on Robinhood and Coinbase and apps of that nature. And I think it's for this reason that I was just at the SBC conference in London a couple of weeks ago, and one of the product demos was a betting app that lets you bet on whether certain crypto prices will be higher or lower 12 right. hours from now. And I see a whole bunch of products that let you bet on an NFL game right next to where you can bet on the price of Bitcoin. And I think it's because there's this overlap in the underlying user psychology of having an interest in risking time, money, or reputation on uncertain outcomes.
Very interesting and a good answer, Lloyd. I appreciate that. I think what is interesting to look at in the crypto space, right? Like trading cryptos on a day-to-day level, obviously it is gambling. I mean, but what's interesting in the crypto space is just what you mentioned, that you are now presented with the option to bet if the cryptocurrency is going to go up and down, up or down. And in the crypto world, this is a quite standard function, a standard product that is offered across a lot of different products in that space. And they make it really fun, that experience. But in essence, it's a very simple product. You bet if the crypto is going to go up or down. And the convergence is basically, rather than doing the day trading, you buy some Bitcoin or you sell some Ethereum, you're presented with this more kind of fun UX UI centered product that is offering you a bet instead of if the crypto is going to go up and down. The experience is very similar, but the actual bet comes across as more fun or a bit more exciting. And I think that's a lot where the convergence will be between these two spaces, because they are so similar to each other, trading crypto or placing a sports bet or betting in general.
Pierre, by the way, is if trading crypto is analogous to the traditional opening up bet365.com and betting on sports, then what is the sports betting equivalent of the more simplified, gamified UI UX where you're just betting on whether Bitcoin or Ethereum goes up and down? And I think that's the question that I talk to a lot of startups that they are trying to solve. How can we take this experience and package it in something that's ultra easy to understand, almost impossible to not understand, takes one or two buttons, you click this button and you're in. You have your skin in the game. You have your action on the line. You have your vested interest in a particular outcome. And I agree. I think also, by the way, and maybe there are some parallels here to sports betting as well, it's depending on where you live and how technologically capable you are, it can be a real pain, not to mention costly in terms of gas fees and transaction fees, to convert your US dollars or euros or pounds into Ethereum or Bitcoin, let alone some of the lesser traded, more esoteric altcoins. And so the user experience that you mentioned also has this additional value it provides, which is that it allows people to get crypto trading type exposure without going through some of the current frictions that exist in that user journey for trying to actually trade and buy and sell those underlying securities or coins.
Right. Let's change topic here for a bit, but still on the same line. Let's talk meme stocks for a moment, because you mentioned GameStop earlier in the conversation here, and it's from a philosophical point of view, it's a topic that is interest to me. I think when we summarize 2021, the rise of the meme stocks and the meme coins will be one of the highlights of this year. Dogecoin, of course, being one of them, and GameStop, as you mentioned here, which was based on the rise of Wall Street bets. So my question to you, Lloyd, is why do you think that the meme stocks and the meme coins gather any form of interest, and that it has stuck? They haven't crashed, right? Dogecoin is still worth billions and billions of dollars in market cap. Why is it that this trend has come, and what is the future of the meme coins and so on? And is there more to it than what meets the eye?
I think that the answer is yes, there's more to it than meets the eye, and that the one word answer to what explains all of this is the concept of community. That really is what is behind and the common thread in all the meme stocks and all the meme coins. Of course, it is a community that is bred on an open source, mentality on the internet, where you could be anonymous or pseudo anonymous, and anyone can have a say and anyone can have a vote, where there's almost no cost to be a part of the community. And in fact, really the only cost to being part of the GameStop or Dogecoin community is having at one point owned a share or a coin or shorted them, or even just being able to talk the talk and knowing the slang and knowing the memes and knowing the abbreviations so that you can look like you belong. And so I think that last year, we kind of had a perfect storm of the pandemic forced people to be at home. The fact that Robinhood and Coinbase technologically have enabled people to purchase options on meme stocks or meme coins in ways that even a couple of years ago was not possible. And the fact that there's internet and online forums like Reddit and Discord that can really handle an almost unlimitedly large simultaneous synchronous conversation about these topics, those all led to the breeding grounds for the community to form around these coins, these stocks. And I think it's the community that has caused the continued interest. And of course, at some point, the community got large enough and they made enough noise and the prices of either the coins or the stocks increased enough that people started taking notice. And then GameStop brought in Ryan Cohen and they issued shares, and now they're going into the NFT business. And, Mark Cuban starts accepting Dogecoin at Dallas Mavericks games. So suddenly there is legitimate utility and value to it. But really, it is the community element. And I think that's not just unique or specific to meme stocks and meme coins. I think a big part of the value of Barstool Sports and their user base is the community element that it gives rise to. I think for the last 5 or 10 years, people have been saying content is king. And I think the next 5 or 10 years will be people saying community is king, and that meme stocks and meme coins are the ultimate piece of evidence for that being the case.
Yeah, I love that. The future, it's basically community is king rather than content is king. I think that's a great way to look at it. But I would like to add to that, actually. And I think the rise of the meme coins is yes, there is a community around them, and that's definitely is a big part to why they are still holding ground, let's say. But I think the underlying reason is that that jokes travel further than logic in a digital world, right? If you look at behavior on social media, if you post something very deep or very logical in social media, it's gonna be picked up by a couple of people. But if you write a really funny joke, it's going to travel, you know, across the globe, so to say. And I think to solidify that point, look at 2016 presidential campaign. The rise of Donald Trump was very much through the 4chan meme community, right? It's jokes are just traveling so much further and quicker than the logic at that point of Hillary and that campaign and so on. I don't want to get too political, but and we can leave the political issues aside. But I think if we look back at it and if we analyze it, I think that's pretty clear that is a lot where the massive exposure was gained through Donald Trump and then to the meme coins. It's just the fact that people appreciate jokes in a digital environment, and you know, now we see on the crypto space is generally, you know, a quite forward-thinking sphere, and they are early adopters to trends and early adopters to technology, and pretty much all new crypto products that are popping up are like based on some jokey, silly brand, right? It's like I do staking on PancakeSwap, you know, and sometimes I check the latest movement on PooCoin, for example, and they think that, and it's funny, you know, so it sticks, the brand sticks, it's funny, like you can relate to it a bit, and then obviously you have the community aspect that ties everything together, and to me that is why, you know, When the rise of Dogecoin happened and everyone was like, oh my god, this is so stupid, it's like a stupid Dogecoin, and yeah, that's the purpose. It's like, that's the joke. That's why it travels much further than if it was called you know, Papercoin or something like that. People would just not care about it if it was not funny. And that is a bit, I guess, a generational shift as to some extent, where you know, our generation is not kind of used to those type of brands in the real world, so to say, whereas the digital natives are now growing up with this meme culture that is taking over more and more your attention. That would be my two cents on the whole thing.
Yeah, if I was going to add a third factor, I would say that, yeah, we are also, and this is largely mediated and enabled by technology, we're also entering an era where a far greater number of people are trying to take control of a far greater percentage of their own finances and earnings, right, and investable assets aside from, you know, the paycheck they get every 2 weeks from their job. This is the gig economy with Uber and Lyft. It's the passion economy, the creator economy, whatever, you know, buzzword, keyword you want to throw at it. In an unprecedented numbers, people are taking control of their own finances and investments and retirement. And granted, some people have perhaps gotten a very misleading view on just how large the average moves in asset prices are when you invest in them and take control over your own assets. But nonetheless, I think we are at the outset of a time where we hopefully will see an increase in financial literacy and in risk-taking literacy. And you roll that into the community aspect and the fact that jokes and outraging content also travel far faster than logically non-funny, non-outraging content. And that's how maybe you roll that all up together. You get the meme coin explosion.
Yeah, that's right. And while we're on the topic, Lloyd, let's jump over to the metaverse and the NFT space in general, which is also just an absolutely fascinating space. And, you know, being in this space on a day-to-day basis, sometimes you forget that, at least for me, I heard the expression NFT for the first time, like, I don't know, 8 months ago or something like that was the first time. It was like Lex Friedman podcast in like March. That was the first time I heard him mention NFT. And I was like, what is this NFT? And since then, it's been an absolute roller coaster ride, seeing the Bored Ape yacht club, rise of that, obviously seeing the rise of CryptoPunks, and now on the metaverse space, there's Sandbox that are appearing, and so many other incredible products that are popping up with insane market caps behind them. I mean, just to solidify the point a bit, the Sandbox, which is a new metaverse game, which has not yet been released, has its in-game economy cryptocurrency, which is called Sand. It has a market cap of like $7 billion to a game which has not been released yet, right? And if you want to buy digital land in this metaverse that have not yet been released, the cheapest plot of land is now something around $17,000, and then you get one plot out of 170,000, right? The space is just absolutely fascinating, right? So can you give me your interpretation of the metaverse NFT space? What's your experience? Like, do you own NFTs yourself? And what are you bullish on going forward? And how do you see this space developing? I mean, we're just at the start of this, right?
Yeah. That is maybe where I'll start my answer, but that we are just at the start of this. There is unquestionably enormous hype around NFTs, metaverse, Web3. I think Star Atlas sold $120 million in NFT spaceships this year, and their game hasn't been released yet either. So it's out of control. I'm looking at these deals to invest in, and they tell me how much their 2021 revenues are, and then maybe try to apply like a typical revenue multiple to that. But it doesn't really make sense because it's not revenue that I even know how to put into some sort of model, because it's totally new. Anyone could do an NFT drop and make millions of dollars. Truly, there are groups of friends who say, oh, why doesn't this exist? Why don't we try it out? And they drop some NFTs and have $2 million, you know, 3 days later. It's crazy. With any really, really hot, hyped technology, it is almost impossible to say what the success of any particular project or even any particular subtrend will be. We are so far from the mature state of the metaverse and NFT ecosystem that there are just too many things that could happen technologically, from a regulatory perspective, from a consumer perspective, to know that Sandbox or Decentraland will be larger before the other one, or things of that nature. But I think unquestionably, on the note of the concept of the metaverse, we are moving toward a world in which a lot more time, money, and energy is focused on digital shared spaces and digital lives. And in terms of NFTs, that unquestionably we are moving toward a world in which there is a lot more digital representation of ownership that is commonly accepted, as well as digital representations of authenticity and things like that. Maybe they will be very, very similar to the current conceptions of the metaverse and NFTs. Maybe they will be very different. But I think those are the real, real trends that we're talking about here. Spending more of our time, money, and energy in digital shared spaces and getting accustomed to digital cryptographically verified representations of ownership, authenticity, and things like that. If I have an avatar and I'm walking around the metaverse and I see your avatar, how do I know that that avatar actually corresponds to the Pierre that I'm connected to on LinkedIn? This is all going to have to get woven together, and, you know, NFTs and the metaverse will converge in that regard. I think that it's very important for stakeholders in the online gaming industry to be looking at this trend, not even necessarily so that they can leverage it, but so that they can be a part of making it a reality. And I say that because, especially when it comes to sports betting, there are a number of reasons for which a sports betting company, in my opinion, has a leg up on being a cornerstone of the metaverse than companies in other industries. First of all, sports fans are really customers that enjoy expressing their brand affinities in all sorts of new creative ways. You don't see people even who love Apple or brands that truly have fandoms around them expressing that brand affinity in the way that they do for their favorite sports teams. And because people who are sports fans are so willing to express their brand affinities in new ways, that tends to make them very open to adopting all new sorts of technology. So FAM tokens, for example, which are now gaining popularity, which are typically blockchain implemented tokens that allow a fan an ability to vote on usually non-game related matters. What color jerseys will they wear? What song will this particular player come out to for his introduction and things like that. And so what you have here is sports fans are thrilled to go through the hassle of opening up a MetaMask wallet or something like that if it means they're going to get to interact with their favorite athlete of all time. That is not something that exists very frequently outside of sports. And so that is something that players in this space should absolutely be taking advantage of. Second, gaming, video gaming in particular, is already very metaverse-like. Later tonight, I'll play some Warzone with my squad that I play with. We will be talking over voice chat, but interacting through avatars that are moving through the Call of Duty world. I started playing Warzone thinking I would never spend a dollar on any of these cosmetic upgrades. But now that I spend a few hours playing Warzone every night, I want to look cool and different and have a little of my personality show through. So I do end up spending tons of money on all of these cosmetic upgrades to, you know, show my personality in what is essentially a metaverse, or at least a small contained digital shared space where I'm having social experiences. And so the fact that so many people who are already playing video games and watching esports and betting on esports and playing Roblox and Minecraft, they are, in my opinion, very clearly going to be the early metaverse adopters because they've already expressed an affinity for spending their time and energy in this way. And then I think the other is maybe the aspect that you already started pointing to, which is that there's a lot of overlap between the crypto native and sports betting community, and oftentimes it seems they are one in the same. A lot of the Discord groups that were the first ones buying CryptoPunks and Bored Apes also bet on sports all day, every day with each other. And it's like a sports betting Bored Ape CryptoPunk Discord server, essentially. The overlap is massive. And then finally, what I would say is sportsbooks already have a lot more of your information than the average platform. It takes a lot of verification and trust to get onboarded with a sportsbook. You have to give them all your personal information. You have to trust them with your finances, to hold your money, to keep it safe, to pay you out. And so for this combination of reasons, I think unquestionably, sports betting and online gaming stakeholders are very well positioned to take advantage of this trend toward A, spending more time in digital shared spaces, and B, using digital cryptographically verified representations of ownership and authenticity. Right now, we call those things the metaverse and NFTs respectively, but I'm more bullish in general on the underlying infrastructure trends than any particular buzzword that is hot now or later.
Right. And so to solidify the point, you mentioned the fan tokens, and that project, Socios, which is the leader in that project, is founded by Alexander Dreyfus, who comes from a very long iGaming background. His office is used 100 meters from where I'm sitting at the moment. And he founded Chiles back in the day. And, you know, this is what we saw a lot in the beginning of the 2010s when Bitcoin, the rise of Bitcoin started, and the prices started to conflate, and it started to be a talking point in the more tech circles and so on. A lot of the professionals from the iGaming industry started to migrate into the blockchain space. And it seems that the industries are quite closely connected to each other. And you mentioned here that you know, the step from having a database that is if you are an online gambling company or a sports betting operator, the step to then implement a metaverse space is not that big. So the question to you then, Lloyd, is: do you think the likes of DraftKings, for example, who have already kind of started to peek into this world, launching their own NFT marketplace, do you think that this would be a logical step for them to consider metaverse-like products?
So first of all, one comment I just wanted to make was that you're absolutely right that something, the best companies that I see as a venture capitalist are ones that were formed by people who created products to solve their own problems, oftentimes not even thinking they would become companies. It just turned out they were so on the pulse of problems that they and other passionate users had that other people needed this solution, and then they turned it into a company. That is a continually successful origin story to invest in across all different industries. And one of the ones that I see very frequently in the trajectory you're talking about is professional sports bettors who said, here are all the problems with online sports betting, mostly which were transparency and fairness and reliability of payouts. How can I solve these problems? And it turns out blockchain is an incredible answer to the question, how do you solve the transparency, fairness, and payout problems in the world of sports betting? Moving to your other question about, do I see DraftKings doing something like this? I think part of what's hard to even figure out or prognosticate on is what that means to do something like this.
Right.
I would at the very least expect, you might have seen a couple of months ago or weeks ago, Chipotle did a promotion where if you visit a Chipotle store in the metaverse, you get a coupon for a free burrito at any real Chipotle store in physical reality.
What a great promotion.
Right, it's great. Brilliant promotion. Probably got tons of people to go into the metaverse for the first time and check out this store. And most of them will, you know, not be around for a while, but they now have their data, and it was a great promotion. I would absolutely, at the least, expect DraftKings to have a virtual reality sports book that anyone with a VR headset or an Oculus can enter and navigate around using an avatar. And that if you do that, you will receive some actual physical reality free bet or bonus, or whenever DraftKings eventually partners with a major Vegas hotel chain, a suite at that hotel in Vegas. I think you'll definitely see that. What does a more robust entry into the metaverse look like? Could there be an entire DraftKings metaverse where if you are plugged into it, you can watch any game from any seat in the house at any stadium in virtual reality? You can place bets at more favorable odds. Maybe you can watch a Zed Run race that looks to you like it's occurring right next to the Lakers game because it's all happening in this kind of virtual space. There would also be maybe some Grand Theft Auto type functionality where you get into a car and race someone else or accomplish various metaverse-based tasks for rewards. Maybe this is a play-to-earn metaverse where you earn DK coin that can be used to place bets and do whatever else DraftKings ends up offering. I think that is a bit farther off. That is a large undertaking. Now, DraftKings also, not only did they launch an NFT marketplace, I believe it was Polygon that they partnered with and are going to be a validating node on their network, and who knows what else, you know, could come from that. So it doesn't necessarily mean DraftKings or whomever has to build all of this infrastructure themselves, but I think what you'll start to see is dipping the toe into the metaverse, you know, setting up one location for people to visit as a promotional tool. But eventually, if the onset of the metaverse, as many people are predicting, is correct, I think DraftKings and anyone in their shoes would be missing out by not preparing to service all of a sports fan's digital needs in a virtual digital shared reality metaverse space. I definitely would assume that they all at least have people working on, if not brainstorming and looking toward that future.
Absolutely. You know, like I was speaking to Marcus Blash, who is the marketing director of Sandbox here a couple of months ago. And we spoke about this fact, like, are you as Sandbox interested to partner with gambling brands? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. You know, he pointed out that their CFO is a former PokerStars employee, and they are happy to partner. And a couple of months earlier, I asked that question because Atari made a press release that they had bought land in the central land and to build a virtual casino, basically, and actually to take bets in that virtual casino.
I think like 25% of the land in Decentraland is casino designated, or something like that. I don't know if it's all Atari, but it's stakeholders that are using it for casinos, I believe.
Right. Interesting. I didn't know that. And so Atari also bought lots of land in Sandbox as well. And they want to have this convergence where, like, they are building an actual casino in Las Vegas, and they want to build kind of the copy paste version of that in the metaverse. And you can basically use the currency in game to also place bets in the Las Vegas resort, something along those lines. I know that they changed those plans eventually, but still the intention was there. And from Marcus of Sandbox, I echo this as well. They are open for these type of partnerships. And so you would assume that it's just a matter of time before there is an announcement that DraftKings or the likes of them, someone else, announces the partnership with Sandbox or another metaverse in order to open open casino space. As you mentioned, in Decentraland, already now, there are betting activity happening on this side. So that could potentially be kind of the first dip in the toes in the water type of thing for a major sports betting or casino operator to experiment in another metaverse before then in a more long-term project build their own metaverse, let's say. If that is now the future, if we'll see if we'll see major brands, especially on the hospitality front, the likes of DraftKings, that are, I think they announced that they want to be kind of the Amazon of gambling activity. They want to be involved in a lot of different verticals. And if that is then the case, then you would think that the natural long-term step for them is to create their own metaverse. Again, going back to your point, going full circle here to create that community around DraftKings, I think that's kind of what was missing to some extent at the moment. I would imagine that that is something they are looking into now, because I think them as a brand would be absolutely ripe to start thinking about building community, especially as they are also looking into the crypto sphere. So there's a lot of interesting movements happening in that space. But again, we are very, very early. It's a lot of speculation right now. But I'd like to hear your thoughts here as well, and ask you, what is your favorite and current NFT product?
So I have been a fan of the Decentraland team and their governance token Mana, which now has done quite well, especially the last 24 hours or so. Right. And I think, you know, I've appreciated their views about the metaverse and building a decentralized metaverse. My favorite NFT projects right now that I'm looking at and talking with are the startups that are trying to position themselves essentially as the SoRare of US sports. So there's a great group I'm talking to called the Owners Club. They have a site that's kind of like Moment Ranks, called Own the Moment, which is like a Bloomberg for NFTs. And then the Owners Club, you could play right now. I have a bunch of cards. You open NFT packs or cards. An NFT card might be something like Baltimore Ravens quarterback. If you have that card in your lineup, you get the fantasy points for any Baltimore Ravens quarterbacks that day. You win cash prizes if your lineup has the most points or the second most points or the third most points. And you can win all sorts of real world prizes. If you own an entire team's worth of Baltimore Ravens cards, you can get free tickets to go to a game at the Baltimore Ravens stadium and things like that. They're working on all sorts of other NFT-mediated games. That's a really interesting one. There's another different type of NFT fantasy sports product where what you are getting with each NFT is an entire lineup. Each NFT burns weekly. There's a weekly NFT minting. You get a full lineup of players, and that's how you compete. Talking to another one where they are building infrastructure where any type of fantasy game you could imagine, or betting tournament, a March Madness bracket, a Survivor pool, each entry is minted as an NFT so that they can be memorialized and sold and have a secondary market throughout the competition. So what I'm really interested in is these various NFT mediated projects in the US market that are hopefully demonstrating, before Fanatics beats them all to the punch, how NFTs will play a role in the future of fantasy sports, sports betting, and things of that nature. And I think those are some of the ones that excite me the most. The ones that are truly offering utility and doing things with blockchain that could only be done with blockchain and that solve problems that exist in the arenas they are playing in.
Awesome. Lloyd, we're going to start rounding off here a little bit, but I have one final question for you as well, which is, I mean, obviously you are a VC, you are investing in various organizations and companies, so I would imagine that you are looking into exciting startups opportunities in the United States on a quite frequent basis. So I would like to ask you just like, what are some of the most exciting startups at the moment as you see it?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have 15 companies in our portfolio now, all very exciting, many more in the pipeline. Just to name a few, one of my favorite companies that I invested in because I am one of their power users is an app called Players Lounge that Drake also invested in, and Strauss Zelnick from Take-Two, and Comcast and Samsung invested in, and a whole all-star cohort of investors. They offer peer-to-peer video game betting, play against your friends or strangers in Madden, FIFA, 2K, any of those games, for money. And they now are rolling out betting against the house, which is something I'm very excited about. Player versus house in the world of amateur recreational video gaming, being able to play on your console or PC by yourself and wager against the computer or against the house on the outcomes. That's a trend I'm very bullish on, and I think Players Lounge is doing a great job. There's a company that just invested in out of Israel called Grip with three I's, G-R-I-I-I-P. Website is grip.com. And they have proprietary technology that I think can best be summarized as bridging the digital and physical worlds for motorsports. So they have a very small box that gets installed in Formula One race cars. It taps into the onboard computer and is constantly, from every single car, relaying every data point about every tire spinning and every brake pad and the engine heat to the cloud. That gets collated, and then they do a number of things there. One is they produce broadcast-ready visualizations automatically. So if you're a TV station and you need a little map of the racetrack with dots that show where each driver is, they can automatically generate those. But what they can also do is recreate in real time a digital clone of the race. And the reason that this is important is that the expectation of many Formula One and motorsports stakeholders is that the future of racing is races where you have 20 drivers on the actual grid and millions of concurrent users at home on their own steering wheels and pedals racing against them. And using this automated technology that Grip provides, those at-home users would get audio, visual, and vibrational feedback of what Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen is actually doing. You would see their actual car drive by you at the real speeds on your screen. And so I think that's a really cool company. And we also invested recently in a play-to-earn gaming guild. We invested in Yield Guild Games is probably the most popular one that got investment from Andreessen. We invested in one called Victree, V-I-C-D-R-E-E. They have almost a 1,000-person community of Axie Infinity scholars and are looking into several other play-to-earn games. So I could probably go on and would end up listing every company in my portfolio and then a bunch that aren't. But those are just three companies from different parts of the world, different parts of the ecosystem that I think are working on the technology that will dictate the next generation of what I call competitive entertainment.
Amazing, Lloyd. I mean, the time is now, really. You know, we are not spring chickens anymore, neither you nor me, Lloyd. And I think the future very much belongs to the next generation here. And for me, this very much feels like Internet 1997, where the older generation, they felt that this was a very complex space. It doesn't make sense. The barrier to entry is very high. But the kids, they pick it up straight away. And I get very much the feeling in the crypto blockchain and this forward-thinking tech space in general that the older generation, which is now us, you know, the barrier to entry feels very high. You know, how do you, what is a MetaMask? You know, what is that? Like, how does it work? And like, how do you buy an NFT? You know, it takes a while to actually go through these steps and actually figure this out. But once you do it and it starts making sense, the sky is the limit for the creativity that can come from this period right now. And if you are not on the boat right now, you'll be you'll be left behind as the old generation who just complained and didn't understand the space, which is a lot what I see, you know, on Twitter and so on. People are questioning the NFT space or who don't understand it and so on. So it's super interesting to hear your input here and the products that you have in your pipeline and in your portfolio here and just your thoughts in general. So and also the convergence here to the online gambling world, of course. And I have a feeling this is not the last time we are doing this podcast. So I'd love to follow up with you at some point as well. But in the meantime, is there any final thoughts from your end, Lloyd?
My only final thought was a point you mentioned that now is the time for creativity in the space, and that there are aspects of the future of the intersection between, call it online gambling and Web3 and NFTs and the metaverse, that might only come into fruition if someone who currently isn't working on a project but has the vision to decides to work on that project. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about being an entrepreneur or an investor in the space right now, is that it's the limitation is only what the limitation is on your creativity. Because we're in a time where if you can come up with a compelling idea that should exist and has the opportunity to generate revenue and engagement, that's about the only criteria that exists, that it's interesting. Any type of technological constraints and regulatory constraints and user demand constraints, we are in the right phase to overcome those. So I would just urge any entrepreneurs that are maybe on the sidelines or have that idea that they're thinking of moving forward with, now is definitely a great time to do so. I agree, Pierre. I will definitely have to come back, continue this conversation, see how some of our predictions were, how they rolled out to be in about a year from now, and really appreciate this is a great podcast. Appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lloyd. And take care of yourself, and maybe I'll see you in New York next week.
Looking forward to it.
Brilliant. All right. Take care, buddy.